南无
释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨。We will start the Theravada Puja now. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa.Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami.Dutiyampi Sanghang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Buddhang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Dhammang Saranang Gacchami Tatiyampi Sanghang Saranang GacchamiปานาติปาตาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิอาทินาทานาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิกามิสุมิจาจาราเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิมุสาวาทาเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิสุราเมรยามัจจาปมาทฐานะเวรมณีสิกขาปดังสมาทิยามิสาธุสาธุสาธุOkay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. Then we can start. Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the third lesson for this Satipatthana Sutta. For those who just came in, please make sure you receive the notes. There are two sets of notes. One set is 3 pages, or the lesson 1 Satipatthana notes. So that one is for your safekeeping, information. The other one is the lesson 2 of the Satipatthana Sutta notes. So today, before we will start, we will go through this lesson 2 of the Satipatthana Sutta notes. Then after that, we will go into thesatipatthana sutta. We will continue from where we stop. Short notes taken to assist in the understanding. Lesson 2 of the Satipatthana Sutta. In the first noble truth final summary, the Buddha summarized all of suffering as, in short,Despite aggregates of grasping, or in Pali is called Pancha Upadana Khandas, are dukkha, for they are impermanent and not self. If you grasp and cling onto them via self-delusion or sakayadity, then suffering will be the result. So this final summary is very important. Eh? You have to inquire into it to develop the understanding. Under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the three turning. First turning, the Buddha proclaimed the First Noble Truth. Then he summarized all of dukkha as what we have just gone through. In the second turning, he has four types of contemplation and inquiry for you to develop. Then he mentioned this noble truth of dukkha under the second turning is to be understood. Means you have to understand this noble truth. So the inquiry will be very straightforward. How can we understand this first noble truth, especially the final summary? So in order to investigate into this truth, we must inquire. What are these five aggregates of form and mind? Only then can we put them to test via Dhamma investigation. True or not? You don't even know what is this five aggregate of form and mind, then the final summary got no meaning, isn't it? So first you have to inquire, what is this five aggregate of form and mind? Then when you understand what are they, then only you can put to test and investigate into it to see whether the first noble truth final summary that the Buddha spoke of is true or not. So the summary is very simple. These five aggregates of grasping, he called them the grasping aggregate, upadana khanda, because as long as you are not enlightened, you have delusion, you have ignorance. And because of that, you will grasp and cling on to this five aggregate of form and mind, thinking that they are real, thinking that they are something that really belong to you. That's why self-delusion or sakayadity will arise. So regarding this five aggregate of form and mind, there are two aspects to it. This one is very vital to understand. If you cannot understand these two aspects, it's very difficult for you to penetrate the Buddha's teaching. So as we have gone through last week, the first aspect is as a what? As a human being. Understand or not? You have been born this life as a human being. So this is the first aspect of the five aggregates. What do you mean that this human being is the first aspect of the five aggregates? That's what I explained to you. We have a physical body or a physical form. So this is the aggregate of form, rupa. Understand? Then there is a mind, or in Pali is called nama, that is trapped inside this physical body or physical form. So in Pali, the word form and mind is called nama rupa. Nama is mind, rupa is form. The Buddha then subdivided this mind into four more mental aggregates. Hence, the five aggregates of form and mind. To understand this mind, we only need to inquire, what can our mind do? So our mind can feel, there is an aggregate of feeling. It can also perceive things via the senses. Then there is this aggregate of perception. Aggregate of feeling is Vedana. Then it can also perceive things via the senses, which is perception, the aggregate of perception of Sanya. Then it can also arise mental activity, like thinking, planning, scheming, your views and your opinion, etc. Not only mental activity, it can also arise mental states, all the various happy and sad mental states, all the various agitated, restless, fear, worry, anxiety, and peace, tranquility, calmness, stillness, like piti, sukha, paucity, all these things. So these are the various mental states that the mind is capable of. Then there is this mental formation. Mental formation are all the mental picture that you see, like your nimitta, or the likes, or all the images that you see within your mind. So they form inside your mind, like mental formation. Then you can also arise mental intention or volition, etc. Hence the aggregate of sankhara, which is also defined as the content of consciousness. Everything that your mind can do, including all of the planning, scheming, thinking, mental state, mental formation, and the various like mental views and opinion, all these are part of sankhara, where these are what your mind is capable of arising. So the content of consciousness is all those things that is inside the consciousness, means whatever movement or activity that you do inside there, like your thinking, planning, scheming, mental volition, views, opinions, mental state, everything that can happen inside the mind. So a more clear definition of sankhara is whatever your mind can do that is sankhara, inclusive of feeling and perception. So that definition is very important. Then finally, the mind can also become conscious of things. Hence the aggregate of consciousness or vijnana. We have the five physical senses, the eye, ears, nose, tongue, bodily tactile, and the sixth sense, the mind. So any of these senses is capable of arising their respective consciousness to allow you to be conscious of that sense base. Like the eye, you can become conscious of what you see. You have the ear, you can become conscious of what you hear. That's why there is hearing consciousness. There is seeing consciousness. Similarly, there is smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. So these are the aggregates that your mind can arise, can give rise to. So when you understand them, you will see very clearly that as a physical form of mind, this human being, actually you are nothing more than the five aggregates. Understand or not? So this five aggregate, first aspect as a human being, is very simple, very easy to understand. Then there is another second aspect, which the Buddha called the five mental aggregates of form and mind, which arise with every moment of sense or consciousness. This second aspect is more important, and the Buddha refers to it constantly under his dependent origination or Paticca-samuppada teaching. You heard of Paticca-samuppada, Some call it Itta-paccayata. Some also call it the 12 link. Especially Mahayana, Si-er-yin-yan-fa. You look at the diagram. This is to make it easy to understand. Up there is the first aspect on the left-hand side. A physical body or form. The first aspect of form within the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. Then there is a second aspect of form, which is mental form. Mental form refers to those external form that enters the mind via your perception or sanya aggregate. So either left or right, they are rupa, form. Then you combine it with the formal aggregate of mind, then you have the five aggregate of form and mind. That's how the two aspects come to be. Understand? Then you look at your mind, the mental part. The four mental aggregates are, the Buddha already explained, these are the things that your mind is capable of arising. First aggregate is feeling. Mind is capable of arising feeling, hot or cold. Yeah? Whatever feeling, yeah? Pleasant or unpleasant, yeah? Or neutral feeling. So this is what your mind is capable of. Then it can know things. It can perceive things, yeah? Through the senses. The second aggregate is sanya. Then it can have mental activity within. It can have all the movement within, which we have gone through. Huh? The third aggregate of sankhara. So the whole of sankhara, inclusive of vijnana, inclusive of vedana and sanya, constitute the content of consciousness. So that's why when you come to the content of consciousness, it's actually sankhara only. Because under Abhidhamma, you will know sankhara 52 is inclusive of sanya and vedana. Then there is another last aggregate, consciousness, or what they call vijnana. So this vijnana is like a container, like a receptacle. That is the pure consciousness without its content. I already explained to you all. Initially, upon contact of mind with the respective sense bases and the external sense data, the mind is able to trigger off the respective consciousness. So initially, at the moment of contact, only pure consciousness come to be. Understand? But because of your avijja, ignorant, self-delusion, within split second, it input a content. Then it become a thought. And once this content go in, then that consciousness is no longer pure. Understand? It is already contaminated by your content of consciousness and depend on your wisdom or delusion. If you have wisdom, what you input into is pure content. Means non-grasping, no delusion. That's why the aggregate become pure aggregates. Non-grasping. But because you are deluded, you have ignorant, avijja, your mind reacts to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. That's the reason why your mind stirs. And the content you put in become kusala or akusala, means wholesome or unwholesome. Then it's no longer pure, anasana. Means there is duality. Duality. There is a reaction of mind. You don't have the wisdom to see things as they are, to accept the reality of the moment. So at the moment of contact, consciousness come to be, during that time, is pure consciousness. But the moment you input the content, then it becomes the five aggregate of form and mind. Then it depends on your wisdom or delusion at that time. If it's wisdom, then it is non-grasping. If it's delusion, then it will grasp, either positive or negative. That's why you will react to it and say, pleasant or unpleasant sense experience. Or they call positive and negative. Means you grasp at the experience that arise. That feeling become craving. That's why dependent on contact, feeling arise. Immediately when there is no wisdom, feeling is conditioned into craving, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. All this duality. Pleasant feeling is something that you like or desirable. So it's called sensual desire, the positive part. Whereas the other one is something that you don't like, you call ill will. Okay, Jennifer just came in. There is a notes on the cushion, I think. If you don't have, you can get it from the other side. We are going through the lesson 2 notes. Yeah. Yes. Pass the mic. Pass the Stephanie. Pass the mic to Mr. เวสมัย
Brother Theo,
yeah.
This light and dislike,
yes.
That is manifested in the mind,
yeah.
Isn't it caused by the sanya?
No, sanya is just perception. The moment you perceive, if there is no delusion, then you see things as they are. Understand? So sanya can know what this thing is. It can perceive it.So if there is wisdom, it's pure sanya, anasara.
Okay.
Means I perceive it as a reality. Then the memory label it, anasara. The moment the memory label it, it's just a word, anasara. You understand that it's just a word, anasara.
Okay.
That's why this morning, for those who have been to Uttama Bodhi Vihara, I don't know how many of you went. When Ajahn Anand was delivering the Dhamma sharing, there was one part very good. I think he tried to explain this part. But I don't know how many of you can understand him. There was a question from the floor. How do we develop bhavana or meditation? So the way he answered was very beautiful.He said, it's more or less what I have already shared with you all. But he said, we have to start from somewhere. That's why he said, last time before he became a monk, he was also like us, a lay person. He started from the monastery. Then he tried to meditate. Then he realized he cannot meditate. He can't develop the calm mind, the peaceful mind. He cannot develop the sati. Then he cannot develop the samadhi.That's why he cannot understand. Then the mind, he realized, think a lot, wonders of. Yeah. So he said, in meditation, it's like that. First, you must understand why are you not peaceful. Because this mind is not trained. Then later on, when he start to train, through anapanasati, which he called buddho, they use the word buddho. Breathing in is good, breathing out is still. To train their mind.To become mindful, to become peaceful. Then when he realized, as he trained, sometimes peaceful, sometimes not peaceful. So that's how he started. Then after a while, as he become more determined, he trained until he become very stable. So what happened? He said he realized this mind, after you have trained, it become more and more clear, more and more stable.Made the sati, the mindfulness, become more and more stable and more clear. Then he managed to enter deep mind state of sati and samadhi. Then he start to see a lot of things. He start to understand what the Buddha's teaching meant. Then he realized all those things that arise after he perceived. The mind immediately label them, he said, identify them.But these are not the truth, not the reality. These are what your mind, through your conditioning, through your memory, label them. That's how it deludes you to attach and cling and worry about it. So he said, what you perceive, if you don't have delusion, you will be caught. Then he realized what the Buddha said, our mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief.When mind arises, everything comes to be. Then he realized all of this mind state that he created, the labeling and the concept and the words that he used to label them, they are actually not reality. They are what the mind labeled them. And he realized all this, they are not permanent because they are mind state. They arise.And they pass away. They arise and they pass away. Then he start to realize that all of suffering come from the mind that labor and grubs through not understanding what these things are. Understand? These are just words created by you. Like Krishnamurti said, words divide, thought divide, create division, create attachment, grasping, clinging, conflict. argument. So this is what thought is capable of. This is what sanya is capable of, because you don't have wisdom. When you don't have wisdom, you are trapped. So your question is very good. Eh? Because to you, the reaction of mind is after you perceive, which is correct, anasana. But it is not the reality, because perception, when it arises, it depends on the person, the form and mind that arises, anasana. If that form and mind that arises already awakened, enlightened, he has the wisdom, the yoniso manasikara. So that perception is pure perception, non-grasping, because he will not cling and grasp, because he knows these are just through your conditioning, through the thought, through the memory, you arise. Then you label it. And when you label it, it is just a word, anasana. There is no reality, because their nature is impermanent. The moment you labor, grasp, cling, and hold, suffering is the result. So the characteristic, they already realize. And they know it's empty. He know you, he know me. Anasana. Everything is just form and mind, phenomena. Even this physical body, even the external form, your so-called loved ones, possession, it's only your thought label them and tell them that they are your children, they are your spouse, they are your loved ones, they are your good friends. But in reality, it's just a form and mind labeling another form and mind. Anasana. It's just consciousness. Mind make ade, just a thought.
So, Brother Teo, so can I ask one more question?
Yeah, I can.
This sanya,
yeah.
Okay, if the perception once occurs, so the labeling is occur at the same time.
No, that's why I want to explain your last part. Your reaction of mind, anasana. Your like and dislike. So I asked you a very simple question, and you will answer your own question. Why did you react? How come certain thing you see or you hear, you don't like? How come certain thing you see, you hear, you like?
Well, yes, my understanding, okay, that normally we react to this because of our old understanding, our old memory.
Yeah, your conditioning, understand not?
Correct.
Means what? Your views and your opinion. You have correct. Been conditioned to say, this is nice, this is not nice, understand not? Like when you eat something, let's say since young you like sweet thing, you eat something sweet, you say this is very nice, I like, because you have been conditioned. But let's say you come from another culture who don't like sweet thing one, they like, let's say, sour thing or very bitter thing. So they grow up in that type of environment and culture. So when they taste something very bitter and very sour, to you it's not nice, and that's all, terrible. But that guy say, hey, this is nice, because of the conditioning, and that's all. So all this like and dislike, nice and not nice, pleasant and unpleasant, it's very clear that these are all relative, and that's all. Depend on people's conditioning and opinion, and that's all. It is not a reality, and that's all. A reality means it's a truth that everybody will understand and accept on. But because these are not a reality, these are conventional truths that are subjective, anasana. Subjective means it's subject to different people's opinion and view. They are very relative, relative to something. They compare, then they say this is nice, this is not nice, anasana. So if you don't have wrong view, you don't have the conditioning, you don't have the avijja and the ignorance, what happens when you see something or hear something?
Yeah? It is pure perception.
Yeah, not only that. You have the wisdom to accept the reality of the moment. Anasana. That's why you don't react anymore. Like angry people say angry things and scold you and abuse you, because you can accept him for what he is. Anasana. So there is no labeling or views and opinion about this guy, anasana. Otherwise you will say, how can this guy scold me like that, abuse me, and say all those things? Means what? You react. Why? Because you want to be right. You have an ego. You think you are real. You think what is being spoken is wrong. Understand not? But right and wrong is relative, like I said. Understand not? Based on your views and your opinion that you have developed or accumulated or your conditioning through your education, through whatever you have gone through in life. Understand not? So when this is the case, you will never see because you will react. But when you develop wisdom already, then you realize all this come from what? From my thought, from my delusion, from my wrong view. If I don't have wrong view and delusion, if I see things as they are, means I see him not as an angry person, say angry thing and abusing me and scolding me. I see him as what he is. Because he has anger, he has delusion. Such a person will react and do this type of thing. So to me, he is just the way he is. That's why I see things as they are. I see him as he is. Then there is no discrimination. Understand not? There is no say he wrong. He is deluded. He is stupid. He is what? No more. You don't label him anymore. You accept him for what he is. When you do that, your mind is at peace, isn't it? Because the acceptance will not cause you to react. That's why you remember early day, I always tell you, the best way to learn Dhamma is, whatever happened in life, what must you do? What must you do? Whatever happened in life, when you confront any situation, what must you do?
Must not react.
Must not get angry first. Yeah. Means don't react. Yeah. Angry means react with unhappiness. Understand not?
So, brother, you...
Wait, I go into this. I will finish it all, then you explain. You ask further question. You see, the most important thing is, whatever happened, do not react, do not become angry. Develop the patience to see things as they are, and reflect and contemplate. Why did my mind stir? Means I still have wrong view, I still have delusion, I still attached to what my mind tell me, what my thought tell me through the labeling, through my conditioning, through my wrong view, not able to understand the reality of the moment. The reality of the moment is, conditioned like that, they will do things like that. They are just the way they are. So when I have that understanding, I'm at peace, I can accept. But not through delusion and try to accept. Understand not? Through delusion and try to accept is suppression. I don't want to be angry because he is like that one. That is not wisdom. Understand not? That is reacting to him. Understand not? Then you say, I don't want to get angry. No point lah to this type of people. Why you want to get angry? Means what? Got anger inside there. And you say you don't want to get angry. And that is suppression. Understand not? Means you don't really accept him for what he is. You don't have the wisdom to see him. The one that has the wisdom will have compassion. If it's not because of delusion, he won't be like that. So you have love and compassion. Then you can accept him for what he is. Then you can radiate love and metta. Forgive him, for he knows not what he is doing. Silently within, understand not? So that you will not trigger off more enmity and all those things. Then you have goodness of heart. Then you act, understand now? After you accept, you act. You still act, but you act with noble evil path, no negativity. That's why life becomes different. Otherwise, you become like normal living being, heedless, understand now? React, get angry, then become violent, understand now? Then try to argue, try to go into what they call conflict and all those things, just to be right, understand? Or to prove your point. So the anger is an evil root. So evil root is the root of all evil. It will make you violent, it will make you evil, it will make you selfish. So that's why the evil root need to be understood. So this part is important. Upon contact, consciousness come to be. Then immediately the mind, through the aggregate of perception, sanya, perceive. But when you perceive something, you label, understand not? But when you have ignorance and delusion, That labeling will be conditioned by your wrong view to react. Understand or not? That's how the like and dislike go in. After this, you can ask further questions.
I think you just explained what I wanted to ask.
That's why I already say, after I explain, you will know the answer yourself. Understand or not? This is how your mind functions. And I see it in my meditation. Just like Ajahn Anand tried to tell you all. When he go into deep meditation as a lay person, he start to see all these things, how his mind functions. That's why his teaching is very different. Those who already know the Dhamma, they teach very different. They teach you exactly as how it happened. Not theory. Not just tell you all the theory. Oh, you must insight into anicchang dukkhanatta. Then they will explain to you what is anicchang dukkhanatta. Then they cannot tell you what is happening inside them. It's just like last time I give you all the example. Let's say you haven't been to KLCC. You read about it in the magazine, in the paper, or in books. Then people ask you, what is KLCC? Oh, Twin Tower, 88 story high, at one time tallest in the world. There is a link bridge. Oh, you can describe everything correctly. Theory, understand? But when somebody asks you, have you been there? You cannot answer. Because if you have been there, you will describe differently, you know. Oh, KLCC. Oh, that's Surya. Because you've been there, that's why you see the word Surya. Understand? Then, if you have been there, you will know how you arrive there. Either by taxi, or somebody take you to the car park. Then how you come out, then you go by MRT, the station there. Then when you come out, what you see? You can describe all these things where you have been there. Understand? But the one with theory one cannot describe. Understand? He don't even know what KLCC is. He only read about it. Understand? He only think KLCC is like that. This is where the difference between the enlightened one and the non-enlightened one. The non-enlightened one doesn't know that thing. That's why he cannot describe to you how it happened. How the whole process happened. How the training come about. And what Ajahn Anand described and what I used to share with you, the book never write. Understand not? The book only got the theory. But in between, what actually happened, you cannot say it. But he did it, that's why he can understand. He can tell you exactly how he understood. Understand not? Then how he insight into all those things. And his Dhamma is very simple. Understand not? So that's why he only talk very beautiful truth. Because for him, he just want to benefit people. So when somebody asks him another question, he said, they used to read a lot of Dhamma book. Understand? Then they don't know which one is true, which one is not true. So he asked Ajahn Anand to recommend which are the books that he can rely, she can rely on, so that she can read them with confidence. Oh, then very good, he answered. He said, Ajahn Chah's book, because he has received it from Ajahn Chah, and he knows Ajahn Chah's understanding is very good. He make Dhamma very simple, is it? Like day-to-day life. Then he used very simple example to make you understand. So he said Long Po Cha's book is very good. And Long Po Cha learned it from Ajahn Man. Ajahn Man is supposed to be the founder of the forest tradition in Thailand. And he's very famous. So because of that, he said he himself had learned from Long Po Cha. Ajahn Cha. That's why he has confidence. He recommends. If he just want to tell you very clear cut and straightforward, he might as well tell you, you go and read my book, understand not? Ajahn Nan's book. But he didn't say that, understand not? He has been very humble. Very, very clear in what he wants to tell you. Something that can give you faith and confidence. Something that can allow you to progress along your path of meditation. That's why when you understand all this, then you will start to see how the great teacher who have the Dhamma or Dhamma, how they teach and how they share is very different. Then when you listen, then you reflect, contemplate, you understand deeper, it stabilizes. We are here more fortunate because we give you short notes. we give you like revision. Then because it's written, you go back and read slowly, you won't make mistake because it's written. Yeah. Everything that I explain to you, if you understand this note, you don't need to go and ask anything already because it's all self-sufficient. Understand that? It's only slowly, slowly you develop the understanding because you are still new to this. You haven't gone into the meditation and haven't really seen it with your own direct seeing, with your own understanding. Yeah. But this will help you, speed you up, understand not? Because once you reflect and contemplate and understand roughly how it can happen, then next time when you meditate, you silence your mind. And if you are confident with the Saddha and Virya, like Ajahn Anand say, when you have confidence, Saddha will be a very powerful mental state that will allow you to insight into all this. Then when it happens, you will have a lot of joy because you understand, no wonder I can't get it. No wonder last time I cannot get it. I don't understand what this thing is. So now I can silence my mind and just investigate into what the Buddha said and what I have shared with you and what Ajahnana has shared. Then you find out from your own meditation whether this is true or not. Means when I silence, when there is contact of mind with the sense basis and the external sense data, I just silence my mind. And I find out, investigate, what happened after that. Then when did the mind stir? When did the mind react? Understand now? When did the mind perceive and labor? You can see them all inside your meditation. Then, no need to ask, understand now? Because you realize it from your own meditation. And then you don't need to remember, understand now? Because these are the things that happen inside your mind. That's why when I come to teach you, I don't prepare anything. Whatever I don't know, I don't know. But whatever that I have already realized and know, I no need to refer to anything. Then I can explain to you. If I cannot explain to you, then I tell you, I don't know. I don't understand. But if I dare to explain to you, means I have gone through it and this is my understanding. So meditation to investigate and confirm the Dhamma is very important. That's why the second factor of enlightenment, the Buddha said, after you have developed sati, the first factor of enlightenment, you must use it to investigate into the Dhamma. Dhamma vichaya. Understand? So this is the reason why Dhamma vichaya is very important. Investigative Dhamma. You need sati. Without sati, you cannot investigate. Sati means what? Silent mind. No thought. That's why you don't go and do those funny things in meditation. Note here, note there, look for this, look for that. Then the mind so active inside there. How to investigate? Understand? That is thinking, understand? Trying to use the thought. Yeah? And use knowledge to correlate what the theory is. Then you think, oh, this is impermanent, this is what? This is. It's not through your investigation. Well, your thought tell you to go and look for all these things. And then when you use the thought to look, when you note, then you gradually believe, after a long time of noting, suddenly like you understand, oh, this is what the book say, this is what it's supposed to be. It's not like that. Because the Buddha already explained the characteristics of the Dhamma very clearly. He said, this Dhamma is pacetang. Pacetang means what? Can be realized by the wise, each for themselves. Understand not? No need people to confirm. No need people to explain. The form and mind that go through it, if they have awakened, they will understand that thing there and then, the Dhamma. No need to refer to anything. No need to check anywhere also. Understand not? Because it can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. That's why the Buddha, under the salutation to the Dhamma, he mentioned very clearly, he said, Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo, means this Dhamma is well expounded by the Buddha. And what is this Dhamma? He said, the Buddha continued, Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo. Then he said, this Dhamma is sanditiko, akaliko, ehi pasiko, and opanayiko. Ada empat cetang. Veditabo, Venuhiti. Means what? The characteristic of this Dhamma, you must understand what are they. So that when you meditate, when it arises, you understand. First characteristic is Sanditiko. Sanditiko means what? Can be realized in the here and the now. No need to wait until that. Understand not? Then it is akaliko, means what? It is timeless, beyond thought, beyond time. If you use thought to investigate, or use thought to meditate, how can you realize something that is beyond thought and beyond time? That's why your instrument is already wrong. So if you do that, you cannot realize, you cannot penetrate. That's why to meditate, the Buddha say you must develop sati. He never say use your thought to note here, note there, and do all those things. Sati means what? Aware, before the knowing. Silent mind to investigate. So this is how you can understand. Then after Sanditiko Akaliko is Ehipasiko. Means this Dhamma, because it is the truth, it can stand up to investigation. You are invited to investigate into this Dhamma. But it is the truth. And that's how it will stand up to investigation. That's why Ehipasiko, Sanditiko, Ehipasiko. Sanditiko, Akaliko, Ehipasiko. That Opanayiko means leading inward into your heart. Then you will realize it. Pachetang, Veditabo, Vinuhiti. Pachetang means can be realized by the wise, each for themselves, no one else. Okay? Yeah. Then we go on. Okay, you go to the second page, lesson 2. Sankhara is actually the content of consciousness and it is inclusive of Vedana and Sanya. But the Buddha separated Vedana and Sanya from Sankhara is because Sanya is the aggregate that brings the external mental form into the mind. And Vedana, which is feeling, is one of the foundation of mindfulness. And is also one of the link inside the dependent origination or dwelling teaching. Hence, it's important. So now you know why the Buddha take these two out and form them as aggregate. Actually, he can just say the content of consciousness is only Sankhara. Then the receptacle is Vijnana, only these two. So that's why form and mind is actually Sankhara and Vijnana. But he has to separate Vedana and Sanya, feeling and perception. These two are very important. They are used in other part of the teaching. So that in the four foundation of mindfulness, when you understand Vedana, the second foundation is to develop mindfulness on this feeling. That's why you got Vedana, no Pasana. Then under dependent origination, upon contact, feeling arise. So feeling is a very important link within your mind. How your mind stir, understand not? How feeling is conditioned into craving through your attachment, clinging, grasping, mainly due to your delusion. So without attachment, without craving, without clinging, you will not stir, understand not? But all this can happen because you have ignorance, you have Sakaya Ditti, self-delusion. So this is the reason why I used to tell you during the early days. People who don't understand, they will try to tell you. Because the dependent origination is, upon contact, feeling arise. Then dependent on feeling, craving come to be, anasana. So they say, logically, what must you do? Cut at feeling, anasana. When feeling arise, let go, cut. You go and ask yourself, can do it or not? Because the moment, just like what Brother Hung has understood, the moment he perceives, the mind already stirs. How can you cut? Without wisdom, you will react. You will attach, you will cling, you will grasp. That's why your mind stirs. That's why without yoni so manasikara, which is wisdom, at the moment of sense experience, wise attention, your mind will stir. Feeling will be conditioned into craving. Because your aggregate, without this wisdom, without the enlightenment, they are grasping aggregate anasana. What is grasping aggregate? Clinging aggregate anasana. That's why when feeling arises, straight away they grasp, they cling already anasana. That's why craving, tanha, arises. Then tanha become upadana, grasping. That's why the dependent origination is very fast, split second, like lightning. You stir, you react already. That's why you need to develop the contemplative wisdom through second turning, then the director turning, bhavana maya panya wisdom, to insight, to develop the understanding so that you have this wisdom at the moment of sense experience. Now, when wisdom is there, then no need to cut. Well, you are not deluded anymore. Then you see things as they are, you experience them for what they are. Then upon contact, feeling come to be. Then feeling remain as pure feeling. Then you can perceive, understand? No problem, because you don't react anymore. Then you can act, you can live, you can move, understand? Then the dependent origination, no need to cut a feeling. We have no more delusion. Feeling remain as pure feeling. There is nothing to hold, understand? If you don't hold, why must you let go, understand? Only people who hold, let go, understand? Only people who are deluded, attached, need to let go, understand? But because you already develop wisdom, understanding, you cannot grasp anymore, understand? That's why your feeling will remain as pure feeling. It will not become craving, understand? So this is the reason why I have been trying to explain many years back. Why without wisdom, you cannot cut, you cannot do all these foolish things, understand? That's why you need to slowly, slowly develop the understanding, contemplate, reflect, inquire, then meditate. Then to develop the true understanding of the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self or empty nature of all phenomena. All phenomena is what your mind creates through your consciousness, understand? That's why we define phenomena as what? Anything perceivable by your mind is a phenomenon. That's why perception that brings in anything will become a phenomenon, understand? So when you understand the universal characteristic, because your five aggregate of form and mind is like that, impermanent, leading to suffering when you grasp and you cling. And because it is impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can hold on to, grasp onto and cling onto and say, this is me, this is I, and this can be mine. Understand? So because of that, there is no more delusion. So the universal characteristic, if it's true, according to what you develop through the meditation, when you see this five aggregate of form and mind as impermanent, suffering state and non-self, then all of the phenomenal world is like that. Understand? Well, anything that you come to perceive is a phenomenal. Understand? That's why the whole phenomenal world has this universal characteristic. That's why the Buddha called it a universal characteristic, understand? Which is inherent in all things, all phenomena, whether mental, physical, or nature's phenomena. Okay? Then we go on. The second paragraph, page 2. True mind is not consciousness. So this one now you understand. True mind cannot come out one. Cannot do anything one. No word, nothing one. Just that pure nature. Understand? The oneness. So true mind is not the consciousness. Whereas consciousness is one of the byproduct or manifestation of the true mind. Consciousness and its content becomes the thought. This one I have explained. And thoughts are respond to memory. That's why without memory there is no thought. When you are born, you don't have thought. Understand? You are very cute, very naive. You have pure consciousness most of the time. Then when we inquire, what can the mind do? We will come to understand via meditation. That's why I use this word, through your meditation. That mind is capable of what? arising, feeling upon contact. Correct or not? I already show you through the physics experiment. That's why you only need to go in and meditate and check. Like the passing car. How you become conscious of that sound? That vibration near and now make contact with your ear organ. Understand or not? Then that vibration together with contact of mind, because you become conscious of this, trigger of consciousness. Then through your perception, you perceive it as a hearing consciousness. Then you label it through your memory. What? Car sound, motor sound, understand or not? Or thunder, lightning. Because these are how you perceive that sound through your memory and your conditioning, understand or not? Then if you are a person who like to be peaceful and calm when you meditate, then suddenly this sound passed by. What happened? You're not happy, is it? It's a disturbing. We are all meditating. How can this sound? How can these people do this? Understand? Or somebody in the meditation or suddenly cough. Then you're not happy. But you never investigate what happened. Who is not happy? You say you. Sakadity then. Why not happy? Because you attach to peace. Understand not? You say meditation place must be quiet, silent. Then only I can meditate. If that is your understanding, then you never progress. Understand not? Because your peace is dependent on the situation. Correct or not? Dependent on the place you are. No sound, only peaceful. All like that. How to live life. Understand or not? You go home, your children complain or cry, you finish already. Then you lost your peace. Understand or not? So you go to retreat, you train and train and train for what? Understand or not? Train to be peaceful just because you have an environment that is no noise, very conducive. Then when you come back, when environment different, you haywire again. That is not the type of meditation that the Buddha wants to teach you. The Buddha wants you to teach you a type of meditation that develops the wisdom to be at peace anywhere, any place, anytime, under any circumstances. Understand? That type of meditation only useful. Correct or not? You agree or not? Otherwise, what for? I go and develop all this peace, tranquility, stillness. Oh, fantastic meditation. It's because the environment is very conducive. And then when I come out of the center, when I confront society, when I go back to my career and my household, I realize that everything is different. And then I become afflicted. Means what? You don't have wisdom. Understand not? You develop a type of meditation which has attachment. Understand not? Attachment to what? Silent. Peaceful. Well, like that, no need to meditate. Everybody go to a very quiet place, like you go for a holiday. If let's say that place, very beautiful, the setting, very beautiful. And you are in a hotel, maybe very nicely furnished. Let's say you can afford, or somebody allow you to go there and experience all this. Or you win a prize, then you fly there. Then how you feel? Because the setting is so beautiful, so conducive, you sure feel very peaceful, very happy, isn't it? A lot of joy, isn't it? Then you come back, you complain and complain and complain. When I was there, it was so good. Come back here, KL so polluted, and so weather so hot, sweat all over. You say when I was in Europe or I was in Australia, so nice the weather. See, who complained? The mind complained, the thought complained, delusion complained. The reality is you are back here. Understand? And how come other people can still be happy while here? But you become like that. Because of what? You attach to the condition there. Understand? And your thought, your mind say, that is good, nice. I want that repeated. Understand? But the reality is you already come back. Understand? There is no condition. And yet you want to have that. So the Buddha said under the first noble truth, reality, when you cannot get what you want, what happened? Not able to get what one desire, what happened? You suffer, this is how the Dhamma is applied. Suffering comes to be when you deludedly grasp and cling and want it repeated. When you cannot get what you want. But the reality is, you are no more there. All of the First Noble Truth reality is the same. Like old age, sickness and death. Happened already, dead already. You go and cry, lament for what? Like the Buddha said, no amount of sorrow and lamentation can bring back the dead. Why are you still so foolish? Go and cry over it and become so sad over something that has already happened. So the reality is the reality. And when you understand the reality, you will behave like what the Buddha used to tell all of those who follow him. He said, whatever that is of the condition to arise is of the condition to cease. So what has arisen has already ceased. Means human life is like that. When there is condition for you to be born, karmically conditioned out, then you arise, understand not? Then whatever there is of the condition to arise is of the condition to cease. Means whatever that is born will also die, understand not? So this is the reality. So when you understand this reality, that's why he asks you to reflect and contemplate on the five daily contemplation, to understand the truth of this form and mind. So that you are not deluded anymore. So that you won't cling, you won't hold, and you won't have wrong view to react and attach. All these will trigger of suffering if you continue to be deluded. Okay? Can follow? Then we go on. We have to move a bit faster. We will come to understand via meditation that mind is capable of arising feeling upon contact through tactile consciousness. Similarly, to see, hear, or smell and think, there must be contact of mind with the sense bases and their respective sense data to trigger of their respective sense thought consciousness and its content to arise the thought. And within that content, there is feeling, perception and activity of mind or reaction of mind, etc., born of your views and opinion. Your mind can also perceive, feel and react accordingly. So perception comes through what? Memory and knowledge. Whereas reaction and stirring of mind to arise the various mental states come from your views and opinion. So this one answers clearly what Brother was asking. Because perception comes from memory and knowledge. So memory and knowledge is just something that is inside your brain. But because of your views and opinion, it stirs and conditions you to react. So the stirring of mind to arise all the various mental states of like anger, sensual desire and ill will come from your views and opinion and your conditioning, understand? And now you understand. That's why without wrong view, you will not do all those things. That's why you need to develop the meditation to see it clearly, to understand what is going on, and then retrospectively reverse all this. Means no more delusion. No more reaction like before. Understand? So this one, Chu, you will know. Last time her view very strong. So as you develop the understanding, then you will know, like what she tell me sometime when we go together for Dhamma class. She said, no point reacting. React for what? You want to be right? Suffering comes about. Why can't you develop the ability to accept the reality of the moment, to accept people for what they are? Then your views and opinion get straightened, understand not? Then you no longer like before. So rigid with your view. So hard-headed. So dogmatic. Sometimes they hold on to tradition. Hey, you Chinese, no, you cannot do all this, no. Then some people will say, hey, you already Christian, no, you cannot hold joystick, no. So all this become what? Views and opinion. Then Chinese tradition sometimes very funny. You at home that time, hey, he said, choy ya sam, cannot say this. What is all this? Rites and ritual, understand? Tradition, belief, understand?
Then when you walk out of the house, you say, hey, don't step on the moon kuang. Understand? Otherwise, bad luck. As if the luck comes from what you step on. Understand? That's why they don't know about the nature's law. Understand? Then they have various types of superstition and belief. That's why when you don't have understanding and wisdom, you become gullible. You attach and cling on to rites and ritual. What the elders tell you, what tradition has conditioned you into believing. Then people will tell you, hey, July month, don't go out, no. A lot of ghosts outside. Why must it be July month? I also don't understand. Because that put fear in you, understand? The Chinese has this belief, that month is a ghost month. Like Chief Reverend Kesridaman Nanda used to say, he said, our Buddhist hell, very liberal, is it? Every year, 1 month let you go out. He said, if our prison here, 1 month in a year let you go out, you think they come back? That's why you think also you will know. Why are you so gullible? They got such thing. So all these are belief, tradition. So tradition and belief have its purpose. But if you develop the wisdom through the Dhamma, then you can apply them with wisdom and understanding, and it will serve a purpose. Just like my talk in Klang, I think Chui was there, my wife was there. So we share this, celebrating traditional Chinese New Year following the Dhamma way. Then I explain a lot of very good Chinese tradition, where with the Dhamma understanding, you can actually make it so meaningful and benefit from it. That's why it's nothing wrong with tradition. It's the way you understand tradition. If you deludedly, through your delusion, out of fear, grasp and cling and hold on to those traditions so rigidly, then you suffer. Understand? You become what they call afflicted. But if you have wisdom, then none of this will happen. Okay, I will go on. This part is what I explained to you just now. Without right understanding or wise attention, yoniso manasikara. Yoniso is wise. Manasikara is attention. Feeling will condition craving at the moment of sense experience. And this craving, which is the reaction of mind through your wrong view, can be either positive or negative for sensual craving. Then there is also this craving to be and craving not to be. Then to be in equanimity, there must be wisdom to see things as they are. So this part clear, Otherwise you will react, your mind will stir. That's why the last factor of enlightenment, remember? Seven factor of enlightenment, what is the last factor of enlightenment? What is the last one? What is the last factor of enlightenment? Equanimity, upeka. That's why without upeka, you cannot see things as they are, and you cannot understand. So to be in equanimity, there must be wisdom to see things as they are. So seeing things as they are means what? Seeing things as they are is direct or pure seeing. That is pure awareness before the knowing. Understand? That's why in the silent meditation, in the retreat, or when you cultivate daily mindfulness, you just silent your mind and just aware. Then you will understand. You will penetrate. Understand? So this is very important. This brings to point one very important point. Because in the Tuesday class, I think, was it the Tuesday class? Somebody asked very good question, about this enlightened one. Was it last Sunday or Tuesday class? I forgot already. He said, last Sunday also, Tuesday class also. Because they thought enlightened ones, sitting as they are, they don't perceive one. It's not like that. They still got their sense or consciousness. They still got their five aggregate. But because there is no more delusion, understand? They are non-grasping, understand? It still arises, understand? But when we talk about meditation, then it's different. Because when we develop the four foundation of mindfulness, what do? We develop mindfulness, understand? And what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is awareness before the knowing, understand? That's why during the meditative state, whether daily mindfulness or formal meditation or whatever, your mind can be silent and just aware, understand? No perception, nothing. Of course, in between, when you want to arise a perception, you can. But because of the understanding, you are not conditioned into grasping, clinging, understand? It remains as pure aggregate. But because when you are mindful throughout the day, most of the time, with very little or no thought, means all the other aggregate, they doesn't really arise. That's why your mind and body always move as one. Your mind and phenomena always move as one. Means what? Awareness and the mind and the phenomena move as one. Means you hardly think, you hardly perceive. Understand? You're just aware. Understand now? Even the pure perception is just pure, non-grasping. And because of that, you can awaken. Understand now? You can insight into phenomena. That's why the characteristic of nature, which is the truth, impermanent, suffering state, and non-self, they are there in the midst of life. Every moment, every instant, in the midst of life and nature, why can't you see? I ask you this question. Why can't you see? Truth is everywhere. In the midst of life and nature, every moment, every instant, why can't you see? What is it? Avijja, very good. Because there is ignorance. There is no understanding. But for the enlightened one, they always see. Why? Well, most of the time, they are just aware. That's why the characteristic is everywhere. Every arising of consciousness is like that. Every perception is like that. The three universal characteristics, all that. Even as we speak, the chipping of the bird, I don't know how many of you heard. See? They are chipping everywhere. These are the phenomena that will arise. So all this, when you understand, your mind is different. This is true real understanding. Means through direct experience in meditation, through direct investigation. Not theory anymore. You put to test. And all this can be confirmed in your meditation. That's why you must have mindfulness leading to heedfulness, then cultivate this four foundation of mindfulness. Then, like the sutta say, enlightenment in the here and the now is guaranteed. Understand? Maximum how long? 7 years. Not too long. And faster is 7 days. Actually, very excited with the 7 days. Oh, he wants to try. Yes. Yeah. You repeat your question.
Brother Teo, the other day you mentioned that wisdom cannot be learned. You either have it or you don't. And in this practice of learning and practicing mindfulness through the four foundations of mindfulness, if you achieve enlightenment, you will naturally be wise, is it? And if you have non-grasping, non-clinging, no delusion, awareness of knowing, mindfulness, etc., you can grow into wisdom. Is that what you are saying?
Okay.
Or should I not use
Don't worry, word? Don't worry. I think I know what your question is. I think it's a very good question. Because she has been hearing what I try to share with them during the early days, even quite recently. I always say wisdom cannot be taught, understand? I cannot give you wisdom, understand? Like the Buddha said, he can only show you the way, understand? You have to walk the path yourself, understand? Means what? Wisdom, you have to awaken yourself, understand? I cannot teach you how to be wise, understand? I can teach you knowledge, understand? All this that I explain, you listen, if you retain as memory, it becomes knowledge, understand not? But if you investigate into it and awaken to it, then it becomes your understanding, understand not? It becomes wisdom. So she was trying to understand if wisdom cannot be learned, understand not? Huh? Cannot be given. Then how come when we cultivate four foundation of mindfulness, we can awaken, understand? It's like you learning, isn't it? Correct or not? You practice, isn't it? But there is a big difference between satipatthana and knowledge, understand or not? And using the thought to understand, understand or not? To commit to memory and all of that. That's why I said you cannot learn. You don't try to learn four foundation of mindfulness, understand or not? You don't try to memorize the four foundations of mindfulness and think you understand. Through what? Through theory, through rational. Four foundations of mindfulness is to be cultivated. Understand? Not? That's why the Buddha, under the second turning of the Four Noble Truths, what did he say? This Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. Understand? You have to cultivate it. You have to realize it. You have to insight into it. And the moment you develop the cultivation and when the condition is set and you insight into it, you will awaken. Understand? And when you awaken, wisdom is already there. Understand? But you have insight and you realize what this thing is. Not through a thought. Understand? Not through a knowledge. Understand? Not through the thought trying to search in the meditation, is this impermanent? Is this non-self? Is this what the Buddha say? Then suddenly you go and link through your knowledge. Oh, this must be it. Where you experience fantastic meditative state. If you still need to ask, then I can tell you, 100% not that thing already. Because the Dhamma is pachitang. Can be realized by the wise. The moment you awaken, the moment you insight into it, that realization is so profound, understand? Inside your heart, it's unshakable. You cannot forget one, understand? It's not a memory anymore. It's an understanding, but you see it so clearly, understand? That these are all the reality, these are the truth, these are the characteristics of all phenomena, all of nature. That's why when you see, you always see. Understand? It's no such thing as, ayo, last time, how come I can see, now I cannot see. Then, that is just an experience. Understand? Where you want the experience to be repeated. Cannot. But insight is not an experience. Understand? There's an insight is one moment of consciousness. When you can go through that cessation, you actually awaken. You can be a sotapanna, or sakadagami, or even anagami. So, all of this cultivation, you need to put to practice or cultivate it. Then, patiently develop the cultivation. Don't try to know anything. Don't try to insight into anything. You know why? That trying is always the thought, understand? The thought that has desire, craving, can never penetrate, understand? Can never insight into it. That's why you need to patiently just cultivate, sincerely. Just silence your mind and follow whatever the Buddha teach you. And just understand what this four foundation of mindfulness is. The understanding is very important. When you understand why you have to develop this four foundation and how each foundation can lead to that awakening, that is the one that you're supposed to focus on. Not to be too eager to awaken. Enlightened, understand not? Yeah, Chui, you got a question.
So that means that's considered the third turning, is it? When you practice?
Yes, okay. That is Thank the third you. Turning. Bhavana Maya Panya means wisdom that arises after you develop the cultivation of the Dhamma, which is mainly the Noble Eightfold Path. And within that Noble Eightfold Path, the four foundation of mindfulness is there. So now it's very clear, the real meditation is actually Noble Eightfold Path. And within Noble Eightfold Path, you have Samasati, which you must do the four foundation of mindfulness. Actually, after the four foundation of mindfulness, now I explain this further. After you have cultivated the four foundation of mindfulness, you have the profound insight or wisdom, understand? No? Means you understand. You have those wisdom, understand? No? Means you can say you have awakened, understand? No? But the Buddha's meaning of enlightened one is different, no? He called the enlightened one noble ones. No? Noble ones means what? They are very noble in their understanding of life, in the way they communicate, in the way they act and arise their thought. That's why they got right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then they have right effort. Then they have right sati and samadhi. So if you only cultivate four foundations of mindfulness, you have the wisdom, you have this mindfulness, but you didn't straighten all the other right views, understand now? Because this one only allow you to free, understand? Where you know what is impermanent, you know what is suffering, and you know what is non-self. This will allow you to free your mind, understand? But you are not a noble one, understand? Because you are not a person, yeah, who is very noble in their understanding of life. Then when people ask you, you just say, no lah, all not real one. All impermanent. You grasp, you cling, you suffer. And all non-self. So you keep on saying like that, who can understand you? Because they haven't seen. So like the Buddha, he has to start with right view. That's why you have to understand the law of karma. But somehow through their mindfulness, when they cultivate the four foundations of mindfulness, they will come to understand how this law of karma functions. It happened because when they do the last foundation of mindfulness, Dhamma Nupassana, what is the last category of practice? They have to go back to Four Noble Truths, isn't it? Mindfulness, this is where you complete the total four foundation of mindfulness. So actually when you complete the four foundation of mindfulness, you will have completed the practice of Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? But as long as you do everything except the Four Noble Truths you haven't done, you are still not what the Arya meant to the Buddha. Understand? To the Buddha, the enlightened one are called Aryas. Arya means noble one. Not only noble in their understanding of life, very noble in the way they communicate, they talk, they act, and they live their life. That's why Noble Eightfold Path is very important. That's why after the Four Foundation of Mindfulness, when you develop all the time, you have to go back to the Four Noble Truths. You have to really understand what suffering is, the cause of its arising, then how the cessation come about. Then finally cultivate the Four Foundations of cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Means develop the clear understanding of all the right view. But for them it's very fast already. Because they will understand the law of karma very fast. You pass them any book, when they read Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23 and 183, they straight away can explain to you already. And they know what the law of karma is already. Because all this is explained and the five daily gone, and they will know why the Buddha teach like that. Understand not? Because of their sati, mindfulness. They can see all this happening. Yeah. Then after that, right view leading to right thought, they will know what right thought is, but they have to cultivate it, understand not? They have to continuously improve it, understand not? Even right speech and right action, they have to learn to talk in a very gentle and pleasant way. But because they are incapable of negativity, they don't get angry anymore, understand not? They don't speak harshly anymore, understand? They don't backbite any. So all the negative things not there already. But right thought, right speech, right action, they need to cultivate, understand not? That's why you have to arise the right effort to speak gentle and pleasant good speeches, understand? To arise all the right thought. But they will know very fast one. What are these right thoughts? Just like how I come to understand, the book also never write. But I can tell you what are these right thoughts. Actually, the book didn't explain what right thought is to you clearly. They only tell you the four Brahma Vihara state. When you have metta, loving kindness. When you have karuna is compassion. Then when you have mudita, which is rejoicing, sympathetic joy. And when you have equanimity or upekkha. And when these four states, you have right thought. In a way, it's correct, but not much use. Means what? I cannot apply. I only go and develop metta, loving kindness. So I every day read it. There every day I try to understand what compassion is. Then I try to rejoice. Then I try to develop this equanimity. Do you think by doing all this you can have right thought? Cannot. But you don't know what is wrong thought. And when you don't understand what is wrong thought, you cannot understand what is right thought. What are wrong thought? I already explained to you. What are wrong thought? Thought that trigger of the evil roots. Understand? And what are evil roots? Evil roots are roots of all evil. Means wrong thought are thought that condition your negativity. Understand? What are your negativity? Your selfishness, your anger, your emotional negativity, your fear, your worry, anxiety, your sorrow and your lamentation. These are all wrong thoughts. So next time, whenever you experience this wrong thought, you will know. Means what? Whenever you are not peaceful and unhappy, you already have wrong thought. Understand? When you have right thought, it's very easy. You are very peaceful and you are very happy. Understand? And what are right thoughts? Thought that condition your wholesomeness, your goodness, your kindness, your virtue, understand? Then if you understand this, then right thought becomes so many things, understand? When you have this gratitude, you have right thought, understand? When you have generosity, you have right thought, understand? When you can appreciate things, you have right thought, understand? When you have respect for others, you have right thought. When you have sincerity, honesty, truthfulness, you have right thought, understand? Then when you can arise a thought that brings forth a condition for people to become happy, to come out of their suffering state, these are all right thought, understand? And when you have right thought, it will condition your right speech. What are right speech? Speech that are very gentle, very pleasant, very conducive and suitable to develop harmony, happiness, joy, and all of the goodness. So all of kindness, gentleness, pleasantness of speech are right speech. Understand now? So when you have right speech, you will be able to actually bring forth a lot of blessing. Even when you talk to your own children, your own spouse, your life will be different. You know more like before. Normally, husband and wife and children and family parents, you know how they talk or not. They take for granted every time react and they get angry. Told you not to do, you do. Boy. Then the husband say, I already warned you, don't do this. You also say, boy, you also do. All these things come from it. These are all not right speech anymore. Understand? You try to be right, then you say things through memory and that hurt people. Understand? Right speech is what? Pleasant, gentle speech that brings about happiness, joy, understanding, love, and all those things. Means what? You should start by thanking your loved one. Understand? Oh, darling, thank you so much. Today, really, because of you, we have a good dinner. You kept the house so clean. You did so much for us. All our clothing, our washing. You look after the kids. I tell you, you talk this to your wife. I tell you, she will be a very good wife. She will love you like anything. You come back and complain. What type of husband is it? Dinner not ready yet. What are you doing whole day? Or is it? Why office so important? Work until so late? Now only come back? They say in Hokkien what? Chui tai ji zhou. Looking for trouble. Correct? All these are not right speech. Right speech means what? Even if you see your husband stressed out, not happy, coming back angry or what, you can tone him down and try to understand him. Well, darling, today something bad happened in the office. Oh, no wonder you look like that. I tell you, he becomes so cool down and happy and start to explain to you. Yalla, the boss today too much. Then everything gone. Then you say, don't worry, be happy. Then maintain your Dhamma understanding, he is just the way he is, accept him for what he is. Work only one, understand? His company one, not your company one. Why you go and worry for him, understand? Why must you arise the fear? Because he say those words. Because you cling, you grasp, you hold, and you react. That's why, who suffer? You suffer because you react and get angry, understand? You accept him for what he is, you don't react and don't get angry, you are peaceful. Then you know what your husband will tell you. Well, darling, you're so wise. Tonight, we go out for dinner. No need to cook, is it? Understand? This is how right speech bring about harmony, bring about goodness and kindness. And you can try it. Even your boy, don't react and get angry and scold. Understand? What is important is, you need to speak in such a way that they can understand you and you can achieve what you want. Understand? Means what? Basically, as parent, you love them. You want to train them. Understand? You want to make sure that when they grow up, they are somebody who will not make mistakes in life. In fact, one of your duty as parent is to caution them and to allow them to have the understanding that they should avoid evil. They should not commit all those evil things that brings about downfall, suffering, negative karma. Means restrain them from evil. So your understanding is just do that, but don't be rigid, understand? Because you are only the parent, not your life. You advise them based on your understanding and your experience, understand? Advice is not to force them, understand? A lot of parents, they went overboard. They get so angry, they score and score and score, and they ground the kid. If you continue like that, no pocket money for 1 week. I won't allow you to go out. No computer. Oh, I have seen a lot of parents switch off internet. Then change the password. You do all those things, your kid, I tell you, become more agitated and more angry with you. You know how they think. My parents like that. Wait till I grow up, I earn money, then they know. Then they will react and think negatively. You think like that, you can control me. I go to my friend's house. I got internet, everything. Or they go cafe. It becomes worse. But you are not trying to understand them and resolve things amicably. You are not trying to develop the communication, the right speech, the right action, the right thought, and the right way to let them understand life. So these are all practical example of the Dhamma that you can apply to your daily life to improve your relationship with your loved ones, with your colleague, your friend, your in-laws, your whatever people that you have relationship with. Okay, we have to go back a bit. Okay, this last paragraph is very useful. You have to reflect, contemplate, and use it for your future. The user of thought is very important. If the user of thought is deluded, then thought will become wrong thought. They will condition one's fear, worry, anxiety, selfishness, emotional negativity, attachment or grasping, etc., leading to the whole mess of suffering. When the user of thought has wisdom, then thoughts become right thought. Understand not? Right thought means what? No negativity, non-grasping. This is the reason why the enlightened ones, their five mental aggregates of form and mind, which are their thoughts, are pure aggregates, which are non-grasping, because they have no more delusion. Without wisdom, self-delusion will be there to delude you into grasping and clinging onto the five aggregate of form and mind as very real. And you will think that you are the five aggregate of mind and that you are a human being that is alive and living. But according to the Buddha, if you are heedless, spiritually you are as if dead. Following Dhammapada verse 21, because the heedless can never understand this anatta nature of form and mind. The Buddha wants you to understand that this five aggregate of form and mind is not you, because it is not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to and hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, and this can be mine. But instead, it's just a condition arising, causal phenomena, that come and go according to nature's law, anatta in nature. So your form and mind, you know why it's condition arising or not? We are karmically conditioned out for you to use, as a tool and vehicle to live life, to understand life, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Okay? So, with that, we end the short note. You got any question or not? You got any question or not before we move in back to Satipatthana? Any question? Okay, if you got no question, turn to page 33. The last lesson we finish off, the first few paragraphs of page 33. Then maybe I will read through the second last paragraph. The four arousing of mindfulness. What are the four? Here, bhikkhu. A bhikkhu lives contemplating the body in body, ardent, clearly understanding, or clearly comprehending. So these two words are very important. Ardent means very seriously, ardently. Then clearly comprehending. Means when you develop for foundation of mindfulness, you must have this quality of ardentness of mind. Then you must have the clear comprehension, means you must have mindfulness, clearly comprehending, and mindful of it. Then having overcome in this world covetousness and greed, this I have already explained, your desire, covetousness, all of the things that you try to own and possess, means there is this covetousness to own them, to have them, and grief. Means basic desire and basic sorrow and lamentation. Grief is your sorrow, your lamentation, your unhappiness. So if anything in this world can trigger you off to have covetousness and grief, technically, actually, you cannot develop the four foundation of mindfulness. Understand? That's why here is very clear. After having overcome, he leaves. Contemplating. Oh, sorry. The first part is on the body. He said, here bhikkhu, a bhikkhu live contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful of it. Then after that, having overcome in this world, covetousness and greed, means in order to start kaya nupassana, if you still have covetousness and greed, it is very difficult, anasara, for you to develop them. So covetousness and greed are basic greed and unhappiness, means the first two evil roots of greed and hatred. Means if you have not developed the five daily contemplation, the basic essential dhamma, so that you can actually free your mind from basic covetousness and greed, you technically cannot develop four foundation of mindfulness cultivation. So this one need to be clearly understood. So like I explained last Sunday, you have to develop this quality of mind of ardent, clearly comprehending and ever mindful. Then you have to develop basic, initial basic wisdom, so that your covetousness and greed is like a lot reduced. Basic greed and sorrow or lamentation and greed has been greatly reduced. So when you have this ability to develop that type of understanding, Your mind is different as well. Then certain things that happen in life, even in your meditation or what, you will not cling, you will not grasp. Understand or not? Then you will not become like affected. You feel like sorrowful, full of grief and unhappiness. So similarly, the second foundation is the same. He said, he leaves contemplating the feeling in feeling ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. Then he repeats, he leaves contemplating content of consciousness in consciousness. Ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief, he leaves contemplating. Instead of mental object, change to Dhamma. Dhamma are the truth that the Buddha teach. Then again, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. Okay. Now today we will start the first category of cultivation. Immediately after we develop the first foundation of mindfulness, means you try to develop kaya nupassana, means the foundation of mindfulness on the kaya. Kaya is your physical body. And the first foundation has six category of practices. The first category of practices is mindfulness of breathing, the in and out breath. He called anapanasati. So under the Thai forest tradition, they use the word buddho. It's actually anapanasati. So how do you develop anapanasati? So we will read through the sutta, then we will develop the practice. And how, O bhikkhu, does a bhikkhu live contemplating body in body? Here, O bhikkhu, a bhikkhu gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree or to an empty place, sit down, bend his leg crosswise on his lap, keep his body erect. That's why I always say, try to keep your backbone erect. Then arouse mindfulness in the object of meditation, namely the breath which is in front of him. So you need to be mindful of this in and out breath. So just like my instruction for you all in the meditation, if you have this heedless mind that has become so heedless, you think a lot, it has a lot of hindrance. That's why your mind is not trained, not peaceful. So what you do is, you cannot straight away go into anapanasati, because within split second it will run away. And you cannot maintain mindfulness. So if you train like that, it's very difficult, because your heedless habitual thinking, born of the evil roots, born of the hindrance, they are very active, very powerful. So what I suggest is, you develop this mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking. The blue book that I have given you all, remember? The transcript. This one. You all have, isn't it? Cheng Hun, you have? Oh, you don't have. You take a copy. You want the bigger one. This one is on the meditation. This is the latest, new one. You go and read through this one. It's all explained inside there. The purpose of mind sweeping method, how you can use it as an initial skillful mean to help you develop the deconditioning of the heedless thinking, so that your mind can be more calm and more peaceful, so that the heedless thinking will slow down, then finally can be taken care of. So this mind sweeping method, if you do it for at least one complete cycle or one, it will make you more calm and more peaceful, so that the momentum of this heedless thinking will stop. That's how it deconditions you from this heedless thinking. Then after that, you follow the instruction to train your mind to develop anapanasati. So anapanasati, is mindfulness of the in and out breath, and it's very easy. When your mind is already more peaceful and more calm, then you can train it. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, you are aware. Breathing out, you are aware. So to do that, you need to maintain awareness in front of your nostril, understand? Just like how you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. Just awareness. Your awareness, which is the mind, just be attentive there, aware of this breathing. Then allow the mind to detect this breathing. Then the mind and the breath move as one without thought. That is mindfulness of the in and out breath. That is anapanasati. So like the Buddha said, breathing in, the mind is aware. Understand? Means the mind and the breath move as one. Then breathing out, the mind is aware. So you just silence your mind and don't do anything. Just maintain awareness. The moment you detect your breathing, because you have to breathe, otherwise you will die. Understand? And your breathing is always in the moment. So you can be aware of that breathing. Your mind is always in the moment. Silent. That's why you become peaceful. So now we will go through the instruction. Then later on, you will try to develop this meditation on your own. So here, O Bhikkhu.
Sure.
If that's the case, breath and mind moving as one, then in actual fact, we are staying in the moment. All the time, the mindfulness practice is being in the moment. Is that it?
You see, anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. Okay, you must get this very clearly. Mindfulness means what? Awareness before the knowing. Don't try to know anything, understand now? Just like you feel your forehead. You know how to feel that. Your forehead is up here there. Then whether any tension, any tightness or any stress within, you will know, isn't it? Because when you feel, you experience what happened there, understand now? When you do anapanasati, it's the same. You feel your breathing, understand now? Can you feel your breathing or not? You just silence your mind. Then this mind will detect the breathing, understand? Because this breath has to go in and out. You have to breathe naturally, understand? And as it moves in and out, it's just like you feel your forehead, you will feel this breathing. The moment you detect it, the mind that detects it just follow, understand? The mind and that thing move as one, no word, understand? That's why you just feel. But the trouble is your mind that is not trained, think a lot, understand not? Split second not here already, don't know, wonder of where. Never mind, the Buddha said, patiently bring it back, understand not? Patiently bring it back. If you are patient, if you do it long enough, very fast, you will settle down. Then you will understand that. It's just like swimming. If you keep on talking about swimming and don't go down into the pool, you can never understand what is buoyancy. What is it like to be able to swim? Understand? Because you're very theoretical, understand? You see the Olympic swimmer, the tape, you read all the books, you say, whoa, freestyle, butterfly, what style? But you never go down water, understand? And you don't even know what flotation is. How is it like to be in the pool? So you have to go in and try. The moment you go in and try, all the theory not important. It's what happened in the pool. Meditation is the same. Anapanasati is the same. Don't try to know too much. Just jump into the pool and find out. Means go in and find out. Understand? The moment you try, after a while, just like swimming, initially drink some water, then become miserable. But if you persevere, what happens? One day, when you have confidence, you start to listen to the instruction properly. What is the instruction? Your body is lighter than water, understand or not? But of course you don't believe, because every step you take, you sink, you go in. Then the instructor will say, just completely let go. Don't struggle, don't do anything. The natural state of body is buoyancy. Means you will float, understand? Just don't do anything. Just silent and allow it to be. Then this body will float. Out of fear, you dare not do. But one day, let's say you have confidence, you saw a lot of people do or can do. Then you determine, okay, I also want to do. Then you let go. What happened? Initially, your body went down first. Because you are no longer standing. No longer standing, the weight will pull you down. But buoyancy, the flotation, take a while to build up one. Understand? Whatever thing you throw in, because this thing has to display the amount of water. So as it displays about, then this flotation or buoyancy force, based on Archimedes' principle, yeah, it will make you afloat. Understand not? Then the moment you experience that flotation, what happened? No more doubt already. Right? Oh, really, lah, can float. Then there is so much joy. Right? And this is meditation. Like suddenly the anapanasati come. Oh, really, when you are really in anapanasati, no thought, no, so beautiful. No? The piti, the sukha all arise. Exactly like you experience in the flotation. But then no need to talk, isn't it? No need to ask questions. Isn't it? But if you have not experienced it, you will continue to ask. Relative, but that book say, Olympic swimmer swim like that, no? You sure? He never say, can float, no? All these questions, no relevant, understand? No? This is what you read, your knowledge, and what you think should be the correct thing. But if you don't go in and find out yourself, no amount of question can help you. No amount of all these things is of any use to you. So if you go in already, try and experience it, then straight away you understand what that thing is, then no more doubt. Then you will be very confident. And then after that, you progress very fast. Understand not? So coming back to that question, you just go and do. And you will know. You will understand. Because it's just mindfulness means you silence your mind, just aware. Then the awareness will detect the in and out breath. We will do it through practical experience after this. I will read through the instruction a bit more. Then you will know what to do. So the Buddha said, after you have crossed your leg, body erect, then arouse mindfulness means what? Determined to be aware means maintain attention in front of the nostril. Determined to be aware of this in and out breath. Understand? So arouse mindfulness in front of the object of meditation, which is your breathing. Namely, the breath, which is in front of your nostril. Then what do you do? The Buddha used this word mindful. Mindful means not heedless, not sleepy. Mindful, he breathes in. Understand? Means through your awareness, you breathe in. Then mindful, he breathes out. The word is wrong. He don't say he thinking. You don't think. This one, the translation is wrong. He comma thinking, you cancel. He don't think. Means breathing in, experiencing a long breath, the mind is aware. Understand? But you will know one. When the mindfulness is experiencing this long breath, you will know one. Then when he is breathing in, this is in-breath. Breathing in long. Understand that he is breathing in long. Then breathing out long. The mind understands, is aware that he is breathing out long. Then breathing in a short breath. The mind understands that it is breathing in a short breath. Then breathing out a short breath, the mind also understands that it is breathing out a short breath. Means This first stage of anapanasati is just to maintain mindfulness, to be aware of this in and out breath. Then as you develop this ability to be aware, then as this anapanasati stabilizes, then this breathing will become long breath. Understand now? On its own will become long breath. And through that anapanasati, the awareness of the in and out breath, you will come to know that this is long breath. Then later on when it changes to short breath, you will also know. Then you know that this breath is impermanent, understand not? It's dependent on the condition. When the condition is such that it will arise, the long breath that make you very calm and very peaceful, then it will arise. Then sometimes the condition is not there, then your breath becomes very short, very subtle, it will be like that. So you only need to experience them and understand them through that mindfulness. And then you start to see their characteristic. How this breath actually functions. Then how you can use it to train your mind to be mindful, to be aware. So the main purpose of anapanasati is to train your mind to be aware, to develop the first factor of enlightenment, which is sati. So if there is no sati, you cannot be heedful, you cannot progress, you cannot train, you cannot develop the other aspect of practice within the kaya nopasana. Then after that, if you already conversant and what they call stable in your long and short breath, then you move into the next phase of practice, you say, experiencing the whole body. Yeah? The mind shall breathe it. Yeah? Of course, the word thinking task, no need. Yeah? Yeah. He trained himself. Experiencing the whole body, yeah? Means breathing in, experiencing the whole breath body. Yeah? Then the breath body can also experience the whole body. Yeah? He trained himself. Then after that, you will move on to the next step. When you experience the whole body becoming very peaceful and very calm, then you train yourself to develop this awareness to be aware of the calming of the activity of body. Means this body at first is very gross. The breathing also very gross. Then as you proceed, the breathing become more and more calm, more and more peaceful, and more subtle. So that's why he said, calming the activity of the body, the mind shall breathe in. Then he trained himself, calming the activity of the body, the mind shall breathe out. Then he trained himself. Means initially, develop this anapanasati, stabilize it, then you experience the whole body. Anasana means breathing in, experience the whole breath body and the entire form and mind. So when you experience that, means your anapanasati will bring about an awareness for you to be aware of the whole body. Yeah. Then when you experience the whole body, you realize that it's still very gross. It still have a lot of what they call vibration inside there because it's not peaceful yet. Yeah. So you encourage it to be peaceful through a calming effect. You say, means calming the activity of the body. Means the mind experience the calmness of this body. Yeah? Means breathing in, experiencing calmness or experiencing piti. So all this you can develop through your anapanasati training. Then the Buddha gave an analogy. He said, just as a clever turner or a turner's apprentice, turning long, understand that he is turning long. Or turning short, understand that he is turning short. So just so indeed, O bhikkhu, a bhikkhu when he breathes in long, understand that I breathe in long. And when he breathes out long, understand I breathe out long. Or when he breathes in short, he understand I breathe in short. Or when he breathes out short, he understand I breathe out short. Thus he trained himself with the thought. Actually, it's not with the thought, with the awareness. Eh? Experiencing the whole body, means breathing in, experiencing the whole body. He trained himself. Then experiencing the whole body, he shall breathe out. Then he trained himself with the understanding that calming the activity of body, I shall breathing. So it means breathing in, you calm the activity of the body. Then breathing out, you calm the activity of the body. So you continue to do that, your anapanasati will progress. But this coming down in certain book, like the one by Achan Buddhadasa, he changed it to breathing in, experiencing piti, anasana. Piti is a type of calmness, a type of joy, anasana. The various mind state that you will experience. So you can do either of them. Breathing in, experiencing the whole of the body, the breath body and the physical body. Then breathing in, when you are very peaceful and very calm, when piti start to arise, breathing in, experiencing piti. Then breathing out, experiencing piti. Then you continue to relax, continue to allow the body and mind to be. Then your mind state through this anapanasati will become more and more peaceful, more and more calm. Then there is another part. Thus he lived contemplating the body in the body. So first part is internally. Or he lived contemplating the body in the body externally. So internally is within your own body. Then externally is outside. It can be done. Then, or he lived contemplating the body in the body, both internally and externally. Then he lived contemplating origination factors in the body, and he lived contemplating dissolution factor in the body, and he lived contemplating origination and dissolution things in the body. Or indeed, his mindfulness is established with the understanding, don't use the thought, with the understanding that the body exists to the extent necessary just to develop understanding. Of course, he used the word remembrance, because when you have developed mindfulness over it, you can recollect. And he lives independent and cling to not in the world. Thus, O bhikkhu, a bhikkhu live contemplating the body in the body. So this is the first foundation of mindfulness.
Relative, may I ask?
Yes.
Contemplating dissolution things. Maybe I missed that when I went to the...
Okay. You see, when you are mindful of your in and out breath, then you are mindful of everything that is happening in this body. What happened? You realize that there is a mind that has this awareness to be aware, understand? So here, under the final understanding, after you have done enough of this anapanasati, you will come to understand. He lived contemplating origination thing in the body. Means how your body experienced this thing, how it originated. Understand not? Initially, you are doing only anapanasati. Understand not? Then how come you can be mindful of all this long and short breath? Then how come you can experience all of the, what they call the bodily formation? Then how you can experience all of this calmness, piti and all those things. So you have to contemplate the origination factor. How you contemplate? You have to silence your mind to find out in the meditation. If I tell you, then you will not do, understand? You will assume you know it. Yeah, Brother Teo say like that, understand? Then you don't silence your mind anymore, you don't practice, you think you know anapanasati. Then you just do them very peaceful, you actually attach, you cling. You never investigate its origination factor. Understand? So you have to find out how it come and how it go. Means he lived contemplating origination factor in the body. And he lived contemplating dissolution factor in his body. And he lived contemplating origination and dissolution factor in the body. Then when you understand how they come and how they go, and when the insight is already there, or indeed, his mindfulness is established with the understanding that this body exists for a purpose, understand now? For what purpose? To the extent necessary just to give rise to understanding and insight. So he lives independent and cling to not in the world. Means you know the body is just a body, understand now? Make up of the four elements. There is no he, no me, he, no I. So all this understanding and wisdom will come. So you know that this body exists to the extent necessary for you to develop this understanding and what they call wisdom for you to live life, to use it to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life. Of course, this part is not written there. But that is how I come to know. I can use this body this way. But here in the Satipatthana, he just say, to the extent necessary for you to develop, actually here knowledge is not the memory. Here is the understanding. Means the understanding. And he lives independent and cling not to none. Means you don't attach to this body. But it's not explained how. After that, you don't attach. Because this wisdom, this understanding, after you do anapanasati, all the stages, you will come to know this body is not you. You make out of the four elements, the 32 parts. Understand now? Then when you develop the four posture, daily mindfulness, and the what they call sati sampajana, means daily mindfulness with clear comprehension of all the activity connecting the four posture, then you start to understand through your cultivation that this body and mind is not what you think. Understand? This body and mind has all the aggregates of mind, like the Buddha said. It has feeling, it has perception, it has all the mental states, and it can arise consciousness. And how later on, as you develop this mindfulness, your awareness become more and more sharp, more and more clear. Then you start to see the mental intention. Then you start to see the mental reaction. Then you start to see the stirring of the mind. That's why later on, with this training, you will come to know this training is very useful. Because it will lead you to understand Vedana Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana, and develop all the subsequent wisdom. Understand? So this four posture is just to train you to develop this very stable sati, anasana, mindfulness, leading to the heedfulness. Then similarly, when you develop all the connecting movement between the four posture, you have not only mindfulness, you have clear comprehension of what you do. And when this daily mindfulness becomes very stable, you will develop the initial wisdom. That's why you will not be deluded to the extent that you will grasp and cling. Covetousness and grief will be much less. Because you will start to see the impermanent, the basic characteristics of nature. This basic impermanence leading to the understanding that you cannot grasp, you cannot cling. Otherwise, suffering comes to be. Then as you develop further, you start to see that this body is not you, because four elements, no knowing. Then the 32 parts are like the bullock cart condition. When they come together, perform a function, you give it a name, then arise already. You call it bullock cart. So in this case, it's human being, arise already, exists already. Then the nine stages of cemetery contemplation is to allow you to know that this body and mind, when it's devoid of consciousness, it goes the way of nature. Means it will go through all the decay, suffering, disease, and death process. Then when you experience and see clearly how when the body separate from the consciousness, when this body is devoid of consciousness, and you see how this physical body decay, how the four elements one by one disappear, then you will start to understand that this body is not you, understand not? And you will not attach and cling onto it because it is a conditioned arising state. When consciousness is there, when it's eliminated, when they put on all the what they call makeup, then it can dilute you into grasping onto it, clinging onto it, and arising the desire to have that form, to own that form, to possess that form. So all this is delusion, understand? Craving. And when you cannot see them, the mind has the tendency to grasp and cling. But when you see them, that they are conditioned arising, when it's devoid of consciousness, it goes the way of nature, then you start to see the reality. And then the fading away, the dispassion, disenchantment, they will come. Then you are not deluded. Once you see, you know, that is the way of form. That is the characteristic of form. It goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to get old, get sick, and finally disperse, die, and go totally, right, dissolve through the nine stages. So all this understanding will develop the initial wisdom and the mindfulness needed for you to progress onto the second foundation, the third foundation, and the fourth foundation, so that you can understand the teaching better, so that you can finally insight into the true understanding of the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. And all these four foundations, they are interrelated actually. Even though you say you start with Kaya Nupassana, especially after you finish the Sati Sampajana, your initial wisdom will arise. And as you do the Sati Sampajana, you will start to see your mental intention, your content of consciousness. You will start to experience how your feeling, condition, craving. And you will start to understand how your mind works, the dependent origination, the dwelling. And you will start to understand how the fourth foundation of Dhammanupassana, the five hindrances, the five aggregates of form and mind, the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases, how you function as a human being. Then the seven factors of enlightenment as they arise, you will be mindful of it. Then finally, you will go into the four noble truths. So all these are related. So now we still got 45 minutes. Okay. You try to develop this training of my anapanasati, then after that I hope you all can report and develop the understanding together. Okay, so you develop the anapanasati through your own training. Since I already given you the blue book, the transcript, I hope you have read. You want to use that one also can, mind sweeping method, then after that only develop anapanasati, it's up to you. The other way is just to do what you already have been doing. You already train your mind, if your anapanasati very good already, you just silence your mind. Then you just develop the stability of this mindfulness, it's up to you. So for those who are new, you try your very best to develop this anapanasati, means silence your mind, relax body and mind, make sure your backbone is straight, stable posture, then breathe in, breathe out naturally. Then you need to do mind sweeping method, you do. You don't need straight away maintain awareness in front of your nostril. Then just develop awareness of the in and out breath. Then breathing in, experiencing the in breath. Breathing out, experiencing the out breath. Then after that you can develop to the next stage. Breathing in long, you are aware. Breathing out long, you are aware. and breathing in short, you are aware. Breathing out short, you are aware. And breathing in, experiencing the whole bodily formation. And later on, breathing out, experiencing the whole bodily formation. You can do it for a while. And after that, breathing in, experiencing piti, or the calmness of mind. So you do that, you just train. Until this anapanasati become very stable. Okay, I'll leave it to you to meditate. I will ring the bell after, I think, about maybe 20 minutes time. Okay. What else? Who still want to continue the meditation? They can. For others who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out there, anapanasati. Then we will continue. So just now, it's almost 20 minutes plus a bit, about 22 minutes. Immediately after we start, the rain start. Then just now the lightning was very long. How many of you freak? Because it was very loud, and I knew. That's why it's meant to be. I think they want to encourage the rain, because for quite a while there is no rain in the catchment. Then we also make aspiration during the closing for better weather, for better crop, invoke the blessing for the nation. So these are very useful. And that day I heard about the water rationing and all this. And the thought suddenly come. I said, maybe we should do it. Just give me a minute. So that's why I was actually quite surprised just now. I said, how come suddenly the thunder come? Then as I meditate, all of a sudden it started to rain. Then the thunder become more and more fierce. Then after that, I went to the washroom. Then I lie down. But the moment I lie down, a lot of things happened. Then after that, I came out. And then that lightning, that thunder, wow, very long. It happened twice. So all these are nature's event. If it's meant to be, if there's condition, things will happen. Okay, now coming back to anapanasati. So how many of you can actually develop the training of this mind to, let's say, stabilize this anapanasati so that you can develop this ability to be mindful for most of the time. Later on, after you have stabilized this, you can actually carry this anapanasati around throughout the day with mindfulness. Then a lot of people can do that. But the problem is you have to be careful. Anapanasati got one very slight disadvantage. When you start to attach to it without understanding, because it is such a beautiful state, when you can do it, you become skillful, you can enter anapanasati very fast. And any time the breath is with you, and throughout the day you're very calm and very peaceful, then when you sit, you can sit very long, because the jhanic factors are all there. Vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. Then your energy will build up. You become very strong. But always remember, you need to release out this concentration later on. Then develop the daily mindfulness. Although anapanasati is important as an initial training, but don't go too deep into it. Understand? Stabilize it. Maintain mindfulness. Then after that, release the absorption out. Try not to go into the one-pointedness. Don't go and develop the energy field and all. If you want to try to experience it, it's okay. But after that, unless you have the tendency from your past cultivation to do it, if you have the tendency from your past cultivation, you will know. Once you connect to Anapanasati, you will know how to do it yourself. Then very fast, this one develops. Then you either enter absorption or you go into one-pointedness, jhana, jhanic state. Then this energy will move from your head. Then a lot of things will happen. If it comes naturally, then let it be. Then just silent and allow it to be. Then you will understand it. Then after that, don't cling on to it. Just experience it for what it is. Then remain focused. Your focus is to develop the four foundations of mindfulness, to develop wisdom, to insight into the characteristics of nature, not to do all those ability, not to be absorbed into very strong concentration or jhanic state. So all this you have to find out on your own. Then you have to make your own decision as to what meditation you are interested in. So now we open up for the class to report. Anybody wants to report your experience? You have to report. Yes.
I'm always quite bothered by the fact that people come and tell me that sitting meditation, the stages of sitting meditation where they have good and bad meditation day versus against daily mindfulness. This was bothering me for quite a while until I decided to say that, well, I'm going to do just daily mindfulness and see how far this goes, gets me. Because I don't really can sit very long due to my back injury. Of late, I would like to share this. Of late, when I'm doing my daily mindfulness, I always stop at the level of independent origination. Whenever the thought arises, wholesome or unwholesome, whereby we have to reflect and contemplate as to where the origination dependent comes from. And of recently, I would like Brother to tell me whether I'm going in the right direction. I begin to find that if I look further into the three characteristics of dukkha, impermanence and non-self, and to see whether my wholesomeness and my unwholesome thoughts that comes all the time, how does it link to these three characteristics of nature? And okay. I find that I, to a certain extent, I realize that when I have a better understanding of these three characteristics, when I check all this down, I realize that it is the desire to be this and to be that, to have this and not to have that, or your views, your fixed views, and things like that. And it all boils down to the egoic self. I believe is the true culprit of the condition arising of all the ignorance and delusion of self. That's my sharing.
Okay, thank you so much. So coming back to the first question, I think she has asked a very good question, because many people have been telling her about formal meditation, the stages that you will go in. Then sometimes you have good meditation, then sometimes you have not so good or lousy meditation. This one I think is very common. It comes about because of lack of understanding of what is meditation. Cultivators tend to have this self-belief. Or commonly accepted belief, means something that is commonly accepted. And most of the time is because it sounds logical. We come to meditate because our mind is not peaceful, correct or not? So it's natural and logical to expect If you can meditate, your meditation has improved, you will become more peaceful. Understand? And you will develop some form of special meditative experience or mind state, like piti, sukha, and all those fantastic meditation. It's just like when you see something happen in the meditation for the first time, see light, you get very excited. Then when you develop energy field, when you develop one-pointedness, when you develop piti, sukha, all these are the concentration type of mind states. Then they say they experience good meditation, especially when they go into absorption and one-pointedness. Their mind is so calm, so still, so silent. It's as if they are in the enlightened state. But like she came to realize, they also came to realize, when they attach, the problem starts. Every time they want to get to that state, yeah, their meditation is to get that good meditation, that good experience. And when they cannot get what they want, there is this aversion, unhappiness. Then they say, today my meditation is very bad. Not good. Not what I wanted. So when you have this, you will get into delusion, because you don't know what is the purpose and intent of meditation. You don't understand why the Buddha teach this type of meditation. The focus of the Buddha's teaching is very simple. Essentially, he teach the Four Noble Truths. So from there, you investigate. What does this Four Noble Truths tells me? What does it want me to understand? That's why when you go into it, you contemplate, reflect, and understand, and develop the meditation, then you will come to understand that this is the most beautiful. The Four Noble Truths actually summarize to us all of life, both the mundane and supramundane. And when you understand them, it's like you understand the secret of life, you know how to live. Then you will be free from all suffering. That is how beautiful and how in-depth the Four Noble Truths is. So whatever meditation that you do, if it doesn't bring you back to this understanding, then it's not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Understand? If it does not teach you how to understand what suffering is, the cause of its arising and how it can cease and how to do it, then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So that's why she said she's confused initially by a lot of people who like say a lot of things about formal meditation that you have to do. There are various stages where you go through and all those things. So she was quite confused because she got a backache and she can't sit for long. Then she decided she preferred to do daily mindfulness. Understand? So that's how the mind will actually react and develop. But she has a reason, because Satipatthana Sutta is very clear. And I also every time emphasize, even in the transcript, the purpose of formal meditation. Then what is the real meditation? Well, ultimately, it is the daily mindfulness, I always say. You cannot come back to the daily mindfulness to develop the four foundations of mindfulness, which include the Noble Eightfold Path. Then that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then you cannot develop wisdom. Then you cannot free your mind. You cannot liberate. In the transcript, it's very clear. Because Ingvi asked the question about samadhi in daily mindfulness. Then I explained. Then the condition arise for me to explain the difference between concentration meditation and the normal vipassana meditation or insight meditation. And how all those who do concentration and absorption, if they don't release out and do the vipassana or insight, the wisdom is actually not there. And all of the experience that they have leads to a type of suppression. The anusaya or the latent tendency or the defilement, they are all suppressed during the concentration meditation. Means there is no chance for them to arise. So because of that, they are like enlightened when their energy is very strong. when their concentration, absorption energy is very strong, when their one-pointedness is very strong, their mind state is like fully concentrated and have a lot of clarity, like no thought, because everything is in concentration and absorption, no thought, no movement, so calm, so still. Yeah. That is how the suppression come about. The anusaya got no chance to arise. Understand now? So even in daily life, if they carry this concentration and absorption for 24 hours, many people can do that, those who do one-pointedness and absorption every day. So it's like they are enlightened during that time, because they feel really nothing can disturb them. And some of them are very calm, very patient. No matter what you say, because the energy is so strong, their metta is so strong, it's like they can understand the Dhamma. They can even recite and rattle to you everything, attachment or thing, like very clear. But actually they didn't know, it was still much, much knowledge level and some form of contemplative wisdom. But the third turning, Bhavana Maya Panya, the real insight awakening, if they have not yet done it, yeah? Then as they grow old, as this body deteriorates, as they start to experience old age sickness, then they will experience suffering. Because during that time, like I mentioned in the transcript, disease and sickness will make them very weak. Old age will make the body more and more fragile, more and more weak. Then because of that, they don't have the strength and the youth to develop that so-called concentration meditation like before. Then they lose their ability to enter this type of absorption, concentration and jhana after a while. Then they start to experience a lot of uncomfortableness that comes along with old age sickness and disease. So during that time, they will start to have doubt. Then they will start to have this, what they call mind state that disturb them. But they dare not let people know, because after have been like maybe a teacher for so long, then after thinking that they have been enlightened for so long, then this thing happened. So actually for these people, they will have to reflect, contemplate and come out into daily mindfulness to develop the real understanding and free. Otherwise they are stuck. Then when they pass away, they still take birth. They can end up in this formless rhyme, or what they call Brahma rhyme. If you do until the fourth jhana, then you can take birth in the 16th Brahma rhyme. But if you do beyond that fifth and eighth jhana, you can take birth in the formless rhyme. And this rhyme, they live and exist very long. But ultimately, they still take birth, they still fall. So, coming back to this question, it brings forth a very good understanding. First, you must understand, you don't have to choose between formal and daily mindfulness. You need to understand what they are. Why do you do them? That's why I say, you must do meditation with understanding. You go back to the essential teaching that the Buddha teach. What does the Buddha want you to develop? The first thing. Under Dhammapada verse 21, what did he tell you? What is Dhammapada verse 21? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Understand? Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So what must you do? You determine not to be heedless, understand not? You want to be heedful, otherwise you cannot start the meditation. You are as if dead, spiritually dead. What type of meditation you do also no point, because you are not heedful at all. And heedfulness refers to daily life, understand not? Throughout the day when you are awake. If you are only able to be heedful when you are in a retreat or in a formal meditation, then not much use to me. Understand? So heedfulness, that is most important. You must develop it so that you are able to have it in the midst of life, understand, daily life. So what is heedfulness? Heedfulness, I told you, got two parts. First, ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate noble eightfold path. Combine the two, it becomes heedfulness. And those who are steadfast cultivating this, Dhammapada verse 23 said, you are destined for enlightenment. You will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana. So this is very clear. Okay? No need to argue. So now I know I need to be heedful. And to be heedful, I need to train my mind to be aware, stabilize it, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. So simple. That is what I need to do. So what must you do? You go formal meditation. What do they teach you? All the method, technique, do this, do that. But you don't want to find out why I do. You never want to ask. Understand? No? I already told you so many times. Formal meditation is very conducive. Understand? No? It's very quiet, less disturbance and all those things. So initially, you need this condition to train. Understand? No? It's just like you want to learn how to swim. You need to go to a pool, understand? A proper place where there are instructor and all those things. Or you want to build up your physical body, you need to go to a gym where it's more conducive. But after you have developed them, then you can swim anywhere, understand? With that training at the, what they call, gym, once you have that training, your body become very, very well trained. Then you can use it to play game. Understand? You don't have to go back to the gym anymore. You come out into life and face competition and all those things. Understand? So meditation is the same. You go to retreat. You go to a quiet place, like the Buddha said, underneath a tree, in the root of a tree, you have a place of quietness. So you train your anapanasati. That is to develop mindfulness. Understand? Then after that, mindfulness develop, you have to stabilize it through what? Through developing the subsequent anapanasati. After you are mindful of the in and out breath, you need to develop the mindfulness of the long breath and the short breath. Understand? After you have developed the ability to be aware of the long and the short breath, you determine to be aware of the bodily formation. Whether it is peaceful or not peaceful, whether it's calm or it's not calm. Then experiencing this bodily formation, you breathe in. Experiencing this bodily formation, you breathe out. Then experiencing piti or calmness of this bodily formation, you breathe in as well. So the breath body condition the flesh body. So all this is training, training, training. Then after that, when you have developed the ability to be mindful, what must you do? The second category of practice is what? Yeah? After anapanasati, what you do? Huh? Kaya nupasana, what do you do? Why go for posture? Well, this is life. Understand? You have to be heedful and mindful in the midst of life. If for posture also you cannot be mindful, then how can you be heedful in life? Understand? That's why the second category of practice is already simplified. You only need to be aware in the four posture. Sitting, I'm aware. Standing, I'm aware. Walking, I'm aware. Lie down, I'm aware. But all the connecting posture, you're still not able to. Understand? That's why the third category of practice is, you're not only mindful, is it? You have to connect all this movement, action between the four posture and develop clear comprehension of what you are doing. That's why you establish daily mindfulness of all action, all movement in the present moment with clear comprehension of what you are doing. Means, first one, clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose. You develop this with understanding and sincerity. Not to deviate, to go into concentration, to develop psychic ability, to develop all the energy field. This is not your intention. If you do that, you are not sincere. You are not developing wisdom to free yourself. You are trying to get these powers to become famous. Understand not? Then to develop the ego. So clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose is very important, so that you won't deviate. Then after that, clear comprehension of domain of cultivation means this meditation can be done in any posture. No restriction of posture. Not necessarily I must sit. Not necessarily it must be formal meditation. Understand not? It can be in the midst of life, while I am doing my work, my career, my household thing. So that's why the four foundations of mindfulness start with anapanasati and bring forth you to the four posture, then the daily mindfulness. If these first three you don't do, the initial wisdom cannot come. Then the Buddha said, after overcoming covetousness and greed, you cannot develop. Because you need the basic wisdom born of daily mindfulness to see clearly the characteristic of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, so that you will not grasp and hold on to this, what they call covetousness and greed, so that your mind can have some form of understanding to allow you to proceed with the cultivation, so that you are not distracted by doubt and all those things. So this part is very important. So the four foundations of mindfulness will let you understand that posture is not important. The most important criteria is to develop heedfulness in daily life, to see your mind, to understand your form and mind, to understand what is going on, to develop the wisdom so that you need not be deluded by what you see, what you perceive, and what you believe. So all this is the purpose of the four foundations of mindfulness. And ultimately is to go back to the four noble truths. Okay? So the first part. Okay, Joyce? Chui, you want to ask a question? So.
Brother Teo, the sutta talks about using anapanasati. Yeah? But actually, I don't do it that way, you know. Because when I first started, I did the Burmese way, which is the rising and falling.
Yes.
But I sort of interchange between the rising and falling and that, and I can change my object of meditation, you know, because
okay.
If you're sitting for long.
Okay, so what is your question?
I do not think that anapanasati is technique specific, unlike just saying starting only with.
So what is your question?
So I'm saying that.
You say you have expressed the view. Yeah, you don't think anapanasati is necessary, okay?
Is it necessary? I put it another way. Is it the only way?
I already explained to you. You listen again. Very good question. You listen again. That's why when you understand, you already know what to do. What the Buddha mentioned in the Dhammapada verse 21 and 23 is very clear. You only need to be heedful. And to be heedful, you have to train your mind to be mindful, stabilize it, and use it to cultivate. This one clear or not? So, how do you train? Is the next question. So the Buddha has a sutta called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, and he already told the monk at that time he preferred this anapanasati because this is the object of meditation that is most conducive and neutral to most people of any personality. Understand not? It is not something that will lead to problem. Understand not? But it's very neutral. It's your breath, breathing, and it's always with you. Understand? And it's so prominent, is always in the moment. So he doesn't say that you have to do anapanasati. What he tell you is you have to train your mind in anapanasati. That's why anapanasati is a mental training. Then later on in the sutta, he also teach other people to do other object of meditation. There was one monk, he asked him to be mindful of the golden Buddha, understand? Well, he has been a goldsmith for 500 lives. Some we ask them to develop Buddha no sati, contemplate on the nine great virtues of the Buddha, then develop mindfulness of it. More important is, after you have developed this contemplation and this training of the mind to be mindful, to be peaceful, to be calm, the what they call the five spiritual faculties will start to arise, understand not? Because you have faith, leading to the virya, leading to the sati. That is most important. When you pay respect to puja, is to develop spiritual faculty. Understand not? Anapanasati is to develop this spiritual faculty. That any of the technique and method that you use, if you know how to train yourself in mindfulness, you can use it. That's why four posture is also a meditation, understand not? Then all of the action and movement in the present moment is also a meditation. Then chanting and all those things can also become a meditation. Because when you do chanting means what? You develop mindfulness of the what they call chanting. Understand not? Then when you are mindful of it, when you chant until the mind and the chanting become one. Understand not? The four how and your awareness become one. There is no one to chant. Understand? That's why the koan is who is chanting the Buddha's name. Understand? There is no one. It's just an awareness of it. Understand? When there is awareness of it, your mind becomes very mindful, very peaceful, very calm. And because of the Buddha's name, your faith is very strong. Understand? So saddha and sati, once developed, samadhi will come. Understand? When samadhi comes, you can see things as they are. Wisdom will come. Then all of the four foundations of mindfulness will fall into place. Understand? Then you will know how to meditate. Eh? Then now I quickly, because we exit 6 o'clock, I quickly reply to Joy's second part. Well, this one you must get it right. About the three characteristics, how to relate. She was trying to use the word contemplation. Because he tried to like develop the trace, the origination factor. Yeah? Then retrospectively, he wants to reverse it through understanding, through wisdom. Yeah? This one is the contemplative wisdom. Understand? You silence your mind, you're aware, and you know how it arises. Then you will develop the wisdom to contemplate and reflect, why did it stir? Why my mind stir? And how come it arises? Understand? Not? With the five hindrances, the five aggregates, how they come to be. So through this, you have to silence your mind to really, really understand. Means don't go and think, understand not? Contemplation is the silent mind in the creative state that allow it to understand, not to go and think. When you have active thinking, it's not contemplation anymore. That's why you have to be with yourself in a quiet setting when you're alone. You just reflect, contemplate. And throw up the question, why did the Buddha say this? How come my mind stir? Then keep quiet. Don't go and think anymore. Then that nature will arise. The ability to understand through what you have investigated, through your silent mind. Then you suddenly like connect. Oh, no wonder when I was sitting, this thought stir was because there is something behind. Then you will trace it. I can give you a hint. It's always your view, understand? It's always your conditioning. So when you know it's your view and your conditioning, then you go and check. Then next time you see, you check again. Then next time in your daily life, you check again, understand? Daily life is more important. We are sitting, nobody to disturb you, understand? Nobody to test you, understand? Maybe somebody make a lot of noise and cough, and then you get agitated. And then that one straight away you know that. It's your view, your wrong view. You attach to a peaceful environment to meditate. Your mind must be quiet, only you can meditate. Environment must suit you. In this world, where God like that one? Everybody must behave according to what you want, then only you become peaceful. Like that is very dangerous. If they don't behave the way you want or expect, then you become violent. You become heedless. That is very dangerous, isn't it? Correct or not? Yeah. It's just like certain religions say. You cannot stimulate their lust, understand? Then they say, you must not make me lustful. Understand? Means you must dress properly, you must not. But in nature, sometimes certain things happen, that thing can drop off. Understand? When it drop off, you become so lustful. That is not meditation anymore. Correct? So meditation is whether the thing drop off or don't drop off, you are also not lustful. Understand? That is meditation. Because you see them for what they are. Understand? And craving desire arise because of lust. And how can you do that? Because the nature's law forbid. Understand? And lust is the evil root, root of all evil. When you violate through transgression, it can bring about a lot of suffering, negative karmic and all those things. Even the law is against you. They can sue you. Understand? For whatever. So this is how you develop. Then when you really insight into the three characteristics, it's the third turning. It's just the four foundation of mindfulness, the daily mindfulness. You don't think one, don't contemplate one, don't trace anything one. You just silence your mind and just do. Understand? And then when it awakens, no thought one. And you understand one. And then the three characteristics, very clear one. The contemplative wisdom one is not so clear. That's why sometimes it's not so powerful. That's why sometimes first turning you cannot awaken, second turning you cannot awaken, then you need the third turning. Because they will set the base for you to understand truth. Then through any of the first, second, third turning, you can awaken. Understand? But you need to silence your mind. That's why during the Buddha's time, some of these monks or these nuns, they just pour water before the water flow to the end, they become arahant. Understand? Then sometimes they just given a piece of cloth like that monk. He rub until so dirty, then suddenly he become arahant. Just give me a minute. Okay, I need to end. Sorry, I got a dinner. They call to remind me. So we need to end. So we need to do the sharing of merit, transfer merits, then we end. I have to go immediately. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata ca bumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Lokasasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cha mehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sampa sampati siddhya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired. May all devas rejoice and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Sharing our merits and transfer merits to departed one. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hetu ca vito bhavatu loko ca raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. And may the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be prosperous. Oh, sorry, be righteous. Then our aspiration. Imina punyang kamena Mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you.